And trying to tell you a story you couldn't possibly believe?
Try me.
Oh God, no.
Put down the knife, Rosemary.
Shut up.
We need you, Rosemary. You don't have to join us. Just be a mother to your baby.
Hello and welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello!
And I'm Claire. In this episode, we're checking in on the spawn of the Antichrist as he comes of age and battles possession by the devil himself in the form of a 1970s-style stone disco. But let's face it, we've all had weekends like that. Michael, what's the movie?
That's right, Claire. We're heading into the world of made-for-TV sequels. This time, we're on the run from a coven in Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby. Such an unnecessary long
title. I can't even manage
a
yay at this point.
Yay!
Because at the moment, everyone who's listening is just going, they made a movie, the sequel to that? Like,
yeah, especially people who are probably from outside the US. Because obviously it was probably on ABC and was nowhere else in the world.
Yeah, so I had no idea that this movie existed. I literally, before I came up to record, told my husband we're coming up to record this. And he was like, oh, is that why you were watching Rosemary's Baby the other week? I had no idea they made a sequel to that. I thought you were just watching Rosemary's Baby because you wanted to.
Yes, because I just randomly like to put on Rosemary's Baby by myself on my laptop on an old DVD for the fun of it.
Absolutely.
So, Look What Happened to Rosemary's Baby aired on ABC on the 29th of October, 1976. That's 9 years after Rosemary's Baby was released on June the 12th, 1968. Rosemary's Baby went on to gross $33.4 million against a budget of $3.2 million. Great return for back then. That's pretty good.
Solid work.
For a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Although this is not a theatrical release, I just wanted to look at the top grossing move seven, or actually the top grossing seven movies of 1976. It may shed some light on why we got this movie in the first place. So I'm going to start at number one and work my way down to seven. Okay?
Okay. Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. So Rocky was number one. Mm-hmm. Number two was a weird thing. I actually had to look up this movie. So I'm actually going to go off topic a little bit and also explain this movie. So it's a film called To Fly! Exclamation point.
Oh,
and I was like,
never heard of it.
Nor have I. So To Fly is a short movie of 27 minutes and has a budget of $590,000. It took at the box office $135 million that year.
What?
It was screened at the National Air and Space Museum, and the museum opened in July the 1st, 1976. So it's not even a whole year. It's only 6 months this film was out for. People travelled for miles and miles to go and watch this movie because it was the first ever IMAX screen that was inside this museum. And that was really interesting. Fun fact for that year, 1976, the first year of the IMAX screen.
Wow.
We didn't get a standing IMAX, like its own solid building showing movies until, I think, like the early 80s. And I think that was in Canada as well. So, but that was the first. So the National Air and Science Museum had that one movie. And some new place, and it still shows that movie to this day. So, see? Interesting.
There we go.
You've learned
Every
something.
Every day's a school day.
While learning about what happened to Rosemary's Baby. So,
probably the most interesting thing I've learned whilst finding out what happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Number three was A Star Is Born with old Babs Streisand.
Uh-huh.
That's good. Number four, we have King Kong. Number five, we have Silver Streak. I don't know what that is. I didn't bother looking that up because I just was a bit kind of like, whatever. Number six was All the President's Men. And number seven, hold on to your knickers, because the reason why we're watching this other movie is The Omen came out. So The Omen release. So The Omen was released on June the 6th in the UK and June the 26th in the US. It took a whopping 61 million domestically, so just in the US. Wow. There's no worldwide figure for this. It's only domestically registered. But for 61 million just in the US against a budget of 2.8 million.
Jesus.
So for a film back in them day, a horror movie to make that much of an impact is huge. So my theory is what most likely happened out, Paramount got wind of how well The Omen was being received at test screenings, because test screenings come on like 3 to 4 months before The Omen hits the theatres, and put the wheels in motion to look what was in their back catalogue and how they could cash in on this Omen phenomenon.
Plus, jump making on that bandwagon.
Yeah, and like the decision to also make it a TV movie, they could release it the same year, very little location work, very little promotional cost, because it's all based on the channel and a few printed media. There's no big trailers, there's TV trailers, but they just put them out on their own channels. It's a very, very different juggernaut. We talked about this quite a lot when we talked about Return of Jafar and how making something for made for VHS or made for TV was very, very different. So guys, if you haven't gone, listen to that episode. We recorded that in our first year. So if you go back, I think it's like our first 5th or 6th episode we did it.
Seems a very long time ago now.
It does. But yeah, go back and into that. We talk about that quite a lot. And also, writing a sequel is far easier than writing an original concept and, you know, putting a sequel on TV. It's probably a lot easier than trying to get a movie made for the theatre after the horrific past this movie is attached to.
Well, yes, because a lot of people that were involved in the original production of Rosemary's Baby felt that it was a cursed production and a cursed movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I think we have The Omen to blame for this movie, because I think, and a lot of people went into The Omen thinking, oh, is actually The Omen a sequel to Rosemary's Baby? The properties were owned by different people. Because at the beginning of the Omen, all we know is that Damien is adopted. Now, it's been years since I watched Omen movies. I know we find out a bit more about his mother down the line. But some people went into The Omen thinking it was a sequel to Rosemary's Baby. So I think this is what the Paramount at the time, who owned ABC, were looking just to cash in, because there was so much talk about Rosemary back on the street after The Omen came out. So I feel like people were like, let's start the wheels in motion for this.
Yeah. Give the people what they want, except I'm not sure they did necessarily give the people what they wanted.
Because now ABC's owned by Disney. What a surprise. I think they bought it.
Look, if it's not owned by Amazon, it's owned by Disney these days, isn't
it? Or Apple, yeah.
Okay.
So, yes. So, Claire, do you have any behind-the-scenes stuff for us?
Yes, I do. So we're going to start, same as always, with our cast and creative team. Now, we've got only one cast member returning from the original movie. It's not the one you would necessarily expect, but it's Ruth Gordon back as Minnie Castabet. Now, Ruth Gordon had won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and she won the Golden Globe, actually, for her performance as Minnie Castabet in Rosemary's Baby. And we're just coming out of Oscar season. In our last episode, we talked about Oscar winners as well, and we played a little clip of the acceptance speech. I think we've got the clip of Ruth Gordon accepting her Oscar as well. So let's have a quick listen.
The next award is for the best performance by an actress in a supporting role. For Rachel, Estelle Parsons. For The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, Sandra Locke. For Funny Girl, Kay Medford. For Rosemary's Baby, Ruth Gordon. For Faces, Lynn Carlin. The winner is Ruth Gordon in Rosemary's Baby.
I can't tell you how encouraging a thing like this is. film that I was ever in was in 1915, and here we are, and it's 1969. Actually, I don't know why it took me so long, though I don't think, you know, that I'm backward. Anyway, thank you, Bill, thank you, Bob, thank you, Roman, and thank you, Mia. And thank all of you who voted for me, and all of you who didn't, please excuse me.
She sounds absolutely delighted for playing a maniac.
I know, I know. And if you watch the video, it's on YouTube. She looks so happy. And again, much as the same as we commented on our Cocoon episode, nice and short. Nice short acceptance speech. Just get on with it. We've all got drinks to drink. We don't need to be up here all night talking and crying. Good for you, Ruth Gordon. Maybe not so good for you in this movie. Say much.
No.
But anyway.
Maybe she was after an Emmy for this one. Maybe she was like, well, I could get a pair.
Maybe. Maybe. Maybe she wanted to kind of complete the set.
Yeah.
But she is the only returner. We don't have Sidney Blackmer back as Roman Castevet. He actually died in 1973. Whether he would have been asked to reprise his role if that hadn't been the case, whether he would have agreed to do it, obviously we don't know. So we've got Ray Milland in as Roman Castevet.
I feel that his portrayal might be a little bit stiff.
So they might as well have brought him in for this movie. Who'd know the difference?
But, no. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Anyway. In terms of primary cast, so we've got Stephen McHattie as Adrian / Andrew, depending on who's talking to him at any given time, because we know from the end of the first movie, the cult of Satanists named him Adrian after Roman Castevet's father.
Mm-hmm.
But Rosemary called him Andy. So at various points through the movie, he's called either Andrew or Adrian. We've got Patty Duke playing Rosemary in this movie. So that's a recast for, I don't know why Mia Farrow didn't want to be in this made for TV sequel.
I don't know. Let me think.
But actually, Patty Duke was one of the original choices to play Rosemary in the original movie, but was passed over in favour of the better known Mia Farrow. So she was in the running first time round. And so then was brought in to play the role in this movie.
Yeah.
We've got David Huffman in as Peter Simon, who is Adrian / Andrew's friend. We've got Tina Louise as Margene, the auntie, in inverted commas, who raises Adrian, after Rosemary disappears off on her bus tour of horror. And we've got George Maharis as Guy Woodhouse, the father, not really father, but the ostensibly father of Adrian, Andrew, husband of Rosemary, although they're separated in this movie. And then we've got Donna Mills in as Ellen, who is the nurse who looks after Adrian in the hospital during the last act, during the Book of Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is directed by Sam Osteen, who only has 8 credits as a director, and all but one of those are for TV movies. But he was a prolific movie editor. He's worked on lots and lots of feature films, including Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Cool Hand Luke, The Graduate, Frantic, Working Girl, Postcards from the Edge. And of course, he was the editor on Rosemary's Baby. So he was also connected to the original production, but not as a director.
Mm.
The movie was written by Anthony Wilson. His credits are almost all TV series, made for TV movies, including things like The Twilight Zone, The Addams Family, and Bewitched. So there's a definite genre that he writes for there. And of course, there is a credit there for Ira Levin, who wrote the original novel of Rosemary's Baby. He wrote some other novels that have been adapted into movies, such as Stepford Wives, Kiss Before Dying, and Sliver. The music is by Charles Bernstein. He had a long-standing working relationship, actually, with Joseph Sargent, who our regular listeners will recognise as having been the director of Jaws the Revenge, although Bernstein did not compose on that. That was Michael Small. But Bernstein also scored a lot of horror movies in the 1980s. He's got loads and loads of credits. The most notable one is A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
In terms of the production itself, now, I'm really glad that you've come up with your little omen theory, because I've done lots and lots of research online, lots of searching around, and I found bits of information that are quite interesting. But the one thing I couldn't find was why on earth they made this movie. So I have nothing to add on that, but I do think your theory may well hold up. Look, if any listeners know more than us, let us know, or let us know your theories of what on earth possessed them, other than maybe the devil himself, to make this movie.
I don't think he would like this. He would be like, don't use my name in vain.
Don't attach me to anything like this. So in her posthumous memoir from 2018, which is called In the Presence of Greatness, My 60-Year Journey as an Actress, Patty Duke said that although she enjoyed working with Ruth Gordon, she regretted being in this movie. And she only agreed to be in it because of the paycheck. And in fairness, she's not in it for very long anyway. She didn't have to work particularly hard. I was quite surprised.
In this movie, it's called Rosemary Who? I was like, whoa, okay, for being such the main character.
I was expecting a lot more Rosemary from.
I thought she'd pop up at the end as well. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
I thought she'd pop up towards the end. No, nothing. No.
Disappeared off on the crazy bus, never to be seen again.
The non-person driven crazy bus.
Yes. So we're talking about the sequel movie to Rosemary's Baby. There is also a sequel novel to the novel of Rosemary's Baby, mm-hmm. also written by Ira Levin. It's called Son of Rosemary. It was actually published in 1997, so it comes quite a long time after this movie. And the two are completely unrelated story-wise. The only commonality between the sequel novel and the sequel movie is that Rosemary's son is called Adrian or Andy, depending on who is talking to him. But really, that's established in the first novel and the first book. So it's not like it's a link between the two sequels. It's just that both sequels have carried that forward because they kind of have to, because it's established from the original story. And the chronology of the source novel and also the sequel novel, although that is irrelevant, but as I say, because they're not connected, is deliberately such that Andy is going to reach the age of 33 around the turn of the millennium. Yeah. So the original movie and book was set in 1965 into 66. He's born in June, I beg your pardon, 66, which conveniently is written as 666. And then obviously that timeline is continued through. So then Andy would turn 33 in the year 2000 or 1999, around the turn of the millennium, which then echoes most of the significant bit of the Jesus story happening when he is 33, although it's slightly wonky timing because the common era that we work in, the dates, starts from Jesus's birth rather than his death. But Jesus's death was supposedly at the age of 33, and the culmination of Andy's story happens at that point as well. Although I'm not sure he's really 33 in the movie. They're not explicit about that.
I don't know what was going on, Claire. They were saying they're in the 70s and it was 1999.
Well, this is the other thing. So the timeline in this movie, it only really occurred to me
to change the future of you. They're just like, it's based in
modern day. So it only occurred to me afterwards that I was like, hang on. So he's born in 66 and then he's 8. So in the Book of Rosemary, so this movie is split into three parts. We've got the Book of Rosemary, the Book of Adrian, the Book of Andrew. And each of those parts tells the story. And it's kind of focuses on that character within the overall story of the Rosemary's baby's life. Yeah. So in the Book of Rosemary, Andy is 8 years old. So we're in 1974, I guess, if he's born in 1966. Adrian, which is the middle part, is set 20-ish years later. So I guess, he's 28. He's approaching his 30s, which would make it the mid to late 90s, which you wouldn't know from watching this movie. I mean, a part of me is like, actually, I'm really glad they didn't try to guess in 1976 what 1996 would have looked at. Because
could you imagine if they did and they got it spot on and they were like, Rosemary's Baby,
that would have been creepy
in the future.
But
that
freaky. We were there in 1996. We remember what 1996 looked at. No
Mark
one
Life.
Would have guessed. No one would have guessed what 1996 was going to look like in a movie. So part of me is like, they're not even trying. to make it look like anything but the 70s. And part of me is quite glad, because what would they have done? Done some kind of like Jetson style futuristic 90s?
Oh, you know what? It reminds me of all those 70s books that were still in the libraries of our school when we were in primary school in the 80s. And they're like, the year 2000, you will be flying in space, and here's your futuristic
cars
home.
Will fly.
And I was like, actually obsessed, and I was like, we're going to fly in space, Mum. And I got there, and I was like, this is shit.
This is not what we were promised.
At GAY with Claire, and this is not what I was promised.
So sometimes we felt like we were flying, but we weren't.
No.
We weren't flying.
No.
So yes, the level of production value in this movie is definitely not as high as in the original movie or in a lot of other movies from the mid-70s, I think it's fair to say. So how did you find... This was your idea, Michael, just to make it really clear to anyone listening. I am not responsible for this. This was very much Michael's suggestion. What on earth possessed you to make me watch this movie?
Well, I didn't know it existed until I suggested it, to be honest with you. And I love Rosemary's Baby. And I never clicked on that bit. I thought... So a couple of years ago, I don't know when it was, but NBC, another channel, did a four-part Rosemary's Baby
movie. Oh, yeah, there was... Miniseries, wasn't there?
Yeah, with Zoe Saldana. And it was amazing. It was really good. They changed the location to Paris. They had that English actor who plays Morph, who's in Harry Potter, plays a bad guy, blonde hair, English dude.
Oh, Jason Isaacs.
Yes, he was in it. He played like the leader of the cult. And it was really, really good. Yes. I enjoyed it. It was great. And then I remember just a couple of years ago thinking, oh, that was good, and I really enjoyed that. And then I was on, I don't know where I was, I think I must have been looking for movie sequels, and this popped up on some kind of weird list, and I was like, I never knew that existed. And then I couldn't find a copy of it, and then you can buy it on DVD, but it's free on YouTube, everyone, if you want to watch it. But watch it on the smallest screen possible, because when you blow it up, it's unwatchable. So I was like,
do you know what? No, maybe when you blow it up onto your screens that are really high spec, it's unwatchable. On my TV, which is quite old now, it wasn't that bad, actually.
Oh, no.
It wasn't too bad. I mean, I've got like a 42-inch screen, I think. So not huge by today's standards, but it looks better than I thought it would after you'd said to me that you were watching it on your iPad.
I would watch it on my iPad without even the screen blown up. So it looked like a little Zoom call in the corner. And that's how I watched this movie. I was really intrigued about it because I went into this completely blind. I've always loved Rosemary's Baby. To me, Rosemary's Baby is one of the greatest horror films ever made. It's up there with Psycho and Exorcist for me. I think it was culturally changing, you know.
Yeah.
I think the original team did it. I'm still surprised that, you know, Mia Farrow was not even nominated for a Golden Globe for this. I think she was outrageous. Nominated for a Golden Globe, but she wasn't nominated for an Oscar. That was it. And I think that
terrible. And she only agreed to do it because the producers said to her, you do this and you'll get the Oscar.
Yeah. And
because they knew that she would turn in that performance, and she didn't even get nominated, which is an absolute travesty.
Yeah, because I think the first film is phenomenal. Even the fact, and I think it still holds up to this day, and I think the fact of the history that followed it with the murders and stuff, I think gives it that kind of I think gives it that extra scare when you're watching it, because
I mean, it almost kind of falls into urban legend territory, doesn't it, because of all the extra stuff.
So if any of you don't know, I'm sure that you all know that the director wife, who was a famous actress called Sharon Tate, was murdered in her home by a cult leader. Not he wasn't there, but members of his cult, Charles Manson's cult, went and murdered his wife and his unborn child as well.
Yeah, she was 8.5 months pregnant. He was traveling for work, and she couldn't travel with him because she was too heavily pregnant, I think, if I remember rightly.
I don't know why I want you to watch it. I think also the fact of it is that I knew at the time that you had never seen Rosemary's Baby, and I knew that I wanted
you
to
watch. It was the way of getting me to watch Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, because I knew that it would. I also try to use this podcast to educate Claire, you know, who I'm. I try to get her to watch movies that, you know, she probably wouldn't put on herself. But then, you know, it's an educational purpose. She's learning, she's acknowledging all
I am.
the movie stuff, and you enjoyed
Bro
it. You enjoyed the
broadening my
first movie.
horizons. I did. So here's the thing. So I never watched it because I do like horror movies. I've watched a lot of horror movies because I've had you in my life for nearly 25 years now, and
Yeah.
you can't be friends with Michael for that length of time and not watch horror movies. But my enjoyment of them is quite different from yours, and the styles of horror movies that we each like are quite
Yes.
different. You like monster movies, you like slasher movies. I quite like slashers as well.
You're a lot better now,
Like
though.
the
When I first met you, you used to hide behind
I
anyone.
don't take pillows to the cinema anymore when we're
You don't
watching a
go to the
horror.
cinema anymore.
No, well, the last movie that we saw together in the cinema was Smile, wasn't
Oh, we
it? I
did, and you were
think.
very good. But you did make a
Yeah.
comment saying you had nothing in the back of your car to cover your face when you got out the car.
Yeah.
Because we
Yeah, if I'd
went,
had a
it all
pillow in the
goes.
car, I probably would have brought it into the cinema with me.
So the reason why she goes back this years and years ago, me and my husband went with Claire to go and watch The Strangers when it first came out, and Claire emerged from her car holding a travel pillow that she held
Yeah.
up with a in an up down upside down U shape through the whole of the movie and watched
I
most of the
watched the
movie
entire
through
movie like through between the U shape of the travel pillow. Because it was
the
a scary movie.
they've got a prequel coming out this year. We'll have to go
Oh, I
and
heard
watch
about that. I heard about that. Yeah. Maybe we'll cover it if it's no good. We'll see.
that.
I thought the Strangers I did think was a good movie.
Oh,
But
fantastic.
you like a bloody movie.
I
I don't
do.
like a bloody movie.
No.
I like psychological movies. I like thrillers. And somehow in my mind, I'd got in my mind that Rosemary's Baby was, I think because people associate it with movies like The Exorcist,
Yes. But
I
even
think
that's
in
not
my
that
mind it
bloody.
was, it's not, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be either when I watched that for this. But in my mind, and everyone just goes on about, oh, Rosemary's Baby is like one of the scariest books ever written, one of the scariest movies ever made. And so in my mind, I was just like, I'm not going to enjoy it. I don't want to watch it. And then I watched it for this, and I bloody loved it because it's exactly the kind of horror movie that I like.
Yeah. I
There's
think for you
very
it
little
also.
blood, there's very little, there's no jump scares. It's all just
No.
fucking with your head.
And I think you like it. And I think the reason why you like it is because it plays out like a play. It has
Yes.
more to do with a play than it does to do with an actual horror film. It mainly takes place in one location. You could easily
Yes.
stage this on a play. It has, when you look at Rosemary's Baby, it screams out The Woman in Black to me.
Yes.
And Woman in Black is probably more jumpy than this. It's eerie, it makes you feel
Yeah.
uncomfortable. That's what's scary about
Yes.
Rosemary's Baby is the fact it makes you feel
Absolutely.
uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And it's the horror that isn't seen. And the fact
Yeah.
that actually for most of the film, you're not entirely sure whether it's happening or not.
Yeah.
You know, is it all in her head or
No,
is it
100%.
what she thinks is happening? So yes, I really enjoyed watching Rosemary's Baby, and I'm
Now
glad
it has
that
dated quite a lot. The need of for consent is very not relevant in this film. It made me feel very icky. And I've watched
Oh no,
the
it's fine, dear. You didn't dream the devil was raping you. That was just me raping you.
Yeah, I'll shave
Oh, well,
down my
that's all
nails
right
next. I'll
then.
do my nails. They're a bit sharp. And I was a bit like, you would shag your wife without her being awake. That is really just because you're her
Yeah.
husband doesn't mean that you can fuck her when
But
she's
I didn't want to miss baby night. No. No, no, no,
oh.
no, no, no. No. No, that's not okay. That's not okay. Let's be clear. I mean, it's a Roman Polanski film. I'm not going to go into the whole ins and outs of
I didn't even
Roman
mention his
Polanski,
name. You mentioned his name. You
but
mentioned his name.
yes, I think we all know that Roman Polanski is somewhat problematic.
Yes.
And then we'll move on from that because we're not actually here to talk about Rosemary's Baby. We're here to talk about look what happened to Rosemary's Baby. So,
Yeah.
how did you find that one, Michael? Are you proud of what you've done now that you've made us both watch this?
And do you know what? In a slight way, it was slightly better than I thought it was going to be. the fact that it has been kind of like retconned and completely removed from people's mindset and the fact it doesn't exist, I was expected to sit down and watch the, like, a really bad TV movie. The acting screams out Murder, She Wrote to me. It's kind of like, and
but in a good way, right?
Yeah, I love Murder, She Wrote.
To be clear, Michael means that as a compliment.
Yeah, yeah, I fucking love Murder, She Wrote. I think it's one of the greatest TV shows of all time. Leave Me Alone in a cabin in the woods with a fridge full of food and a Murder, She Wrote box set. I'm happy. I'm a happy chap. I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine with that. I think it's completely unnecessary. I don't know if people are aware, but when ABC were doing their Friday night movies, they were kind of like designed like how we get Netflix movies now and we get Amazon Prime movies, where they go in to specifically make a lower costing movie that we all notice them. Now we call them streaming movies, and we watch movies and we go, oh, that was okay for a streaming movie. This is that. This is okay for a TV movie / streaming movie. Like, if you want to see the cinema, you would be like, where's my refund? If I put this on the TV late at 12 o'clock on a night and I was had a few glasses of wine, I would sit and watch it. I would have no complaints about it. And a lot of those TV movies, because ABC made this promise that they're going to do a new Friday night TV movie every single week, what was made for TV. A lot of those things they pushed out were TV pilots that they decided not to greenlight.
Right.
And they just shoved them out. So no one knows what kind of happened with this movie. I think the interest for a sequel or to carry on the story of Rosemary's Baby was obviously there, pushed by The Omen. But then this film ends on such a cliffhanger, I was like, were they looking to do a TV series afterwards?
Were they trying to set up a spin-off series? Yeah.
Or were they
what happened to Rosemary's Baby's Baby?
Yeah. Or were they trying to do another TV movie after this and make it a TV franchise? Because ABC was doing this. There's loads and loads, hundreds of these made-for-TV movies on ABC. Mm. And, you know, instead of letting the people get given money and commissioned money to go and make these pilots, and instead of just chucking them in the vault or taking a tax break on them, you've got a 2-hour window on a Friday night to go and shove it out in. You know, people don't expect anything else. And this film, I just felt like maybe it was more. My issue with this movie, and it's not even the cast, it's the script. This script was written in a hurry. Yeah. That's why I think The Omen had a massive impact on this movie, because this movie, the script is the weakest part. The premise is the fact they gave Andrew the same storyline as Rosemary from the first film, the fact that he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Is a real cop-out to me, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of like completely, they leave him in the dark. He thinks weird things are happening to him. I'm like, this is the same thing that happened to Rosemary. They didn't even try to kind of like embrace him. They always kind of like made him feel like he wasn't, they always drugged him up before doing the rituals and stuff. And, you know, like that he felt like he wasn't doing it. You know, he had an out of body experience. And it just felt really, really unnecessary. It did kind of like give me a TV movie version of Exorcist 2, Bill, kind of thing. Well, I think they just didn't know what the audience wanted. So they just kind of like did what they thought was quick and easy and tried to make a film they wanted. So I think Exorcist 2 is a better movie than this.
Yes, agreed.
So, agreed. But like writing out Rosemary of 80% of the movie.
So weird. So weird. And actually, so the thing I liked most about Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby was the Book of Rosemary. I thought it was a really good setup for what could have been a really good horror movie. And it could have been as engaging in different ways, but as engaging as the original. And then to just send her off on that weird driverless bus with that kind of crazy scream.
Yeah.
And then we don't see her again. Hear from her. Nobody even speaks her name again.
It's like she drives off in this driverless bus, and it was very kind of like Nightmare on Elm Street, wasn't it? It was kind of like, oh, there's no one driving the bus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was exactly like,
And I expected her to turn up at the end with a bit of really bad prosthetic aging makeup.
Yeah,
and be
yeah.
like, I'm here for you, son. Your dad's now dead because he tried killing you and running you over. But then he hit
But he never even found out that was his dad, did he?
No. That's why I think there was a massive...
So he was just like, why is some random movie star just run over my girlfriend, who's not my girlfriend, who just date raped me?
Yeah.
I really liked The Book of Rosemary. I thought I was going to be in for something quite juicy. And then they got to the end of her story and it just turned into this slightly insipid, like you say, it's just like a weak rehash of the first storyline.
So the woman who brings him up, okay, maybe you can give me up. The woman who brings him up, who's living in the caravan by this weird bus stop.
Yes.
Now Adrian kills those two boys. They run into
she tells Rosemary that he killed the two boys. We don't know.
No.
But someone clearly thinks they know, because when you read the synopsis on Wikipedia, it says that she is lying when she tells Rosemary that he killed the boys. I don't think the movie is particularly conclusive on that. We don't see him kill the boys.
How does she know they're going to be there? How do they know Rosemary's going to be there?
Because the cult have people everywhere, right, is my assumption.
Right.
Is that they just have people everywhere hunting her down. I think that's supposed to be the implication of that, is that actually it's all inevitable, and wherever she'd ended up with Andrew, that they would have found her. And maybe, yes, you know, it took them a while, but I think they would have found her wherever she ended up.
Yeah. I think what I find most upsetting about this is that I think there is still keen awareness on Rosemary's Baby. And I think there is still some aspect of a story there to be carried on, whoever wants to take it on. But I think everybody's so, after this and after everything that's related to the first movie, no one's kind of like, just let it sit on a shelf.
Yeah.
Like, I think.
Well, and there is now a sequel book that could be drawn on. I've not seen anyone making noise about trying to adapt that into a sequel movie. Obviously, they'd have to rock on.
I think a play would do great. But short play, a couple of months on the West End, a couple of months on Broadway, I think would do marvelous. Like, think about what they can do with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Can you imagine having like a... They did The Omen not long ago in the West End, didn't they?
Oh, did they? I don't remember. Yeah. Did I miss that?
I think they did The Omen or The Exorcist. One of the two. I can't remember. They had like a play.
Oh, yes. You're right. The Exorcist. They did. You're right. So, there was a stage doing The Exorcist.
Why could, like, if you could do something with a sequel to Rosemary's Baby, like, and keep it in the apartment of the first film, I think that'd be really interesting to watch.
But again, I think I'd rather see a stage adaptation of the first movie.
Yeah.
Than of a potential sequel, I suppose. And this is the crux of it for me, is that aside from whatever you think of the movie itself, it's just so unnecessary. And if you're going to make a sequel to Rosemary's Baby, it deserves to be better than this.
Yes.
That movie deserves a better sequel than it got. In Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby, even as a TV movie, it doesn't do itself justice. It doesn't, the second and third acts don't live up to the promise of the first act. I mean, the Book of Adrian, the middle act, is like some sort of Timu version of Tommy meets the Rocky Horror Show. It's just
so spaced
out. I just found myself watching it thinking, it's reminiscent of so many other things and worse than all of them. So I would be much better off either watching Rosemary's Baby or watching Tommy or watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show than watching this weird kind of cut-price like amalgamation.
He's kind of like in this kind of gender-neutral drag while he's best friends being electrocuted in the shape of Jesus outside by his father. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, it was just a bit like...
It had after that, and he's like in a mental home, you're like, what the fuck is going on with this movie? What did we get no confidence of that? That was weird.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, that there was so much considering what you were saying about how the first movie had almost a single set.
Yeah,
it was almost entirely in in their apartment and okay later on in the neighbor's apartment as well. But there was so much suspense, there was so much subtlety in that movie, there was such strong characterization, and even in the characters that carried through,
yeah,
especially, you know, Minnie Castevet is literally, it's the same character, it's the same actress, and the performance is nowhere near the level of how she performed in the first movie. It just feels like a really cut price version. It's like they ordered it off Shein Wish.com. Or something.
Yeah, Wish.com.
Yeah.
Wish.com version of... I did think the guy that played her husband in this... I think Roman Cassavet, I think the actor that took on their sugar, I don't think he did a bad job trying to imitate...
But you know what? I think for all I was just slagging off Ruth Gordon, I'm not slagging off Ruth Gordon because I think all of the performances were okay. Like you said, when we...
The TV movie.
The issue is not the performances. The issue is... writing and the story and the development of it. So when I'm saying about the character, it's the characterization rather than the performances.
Yeah,
that are the issue.
Yeah,
there's just not enough depth.
Yeah, I felt Ruth Gordon was doing a imitation of her character from the first film.
And yes, it was Ruth Gordon as Ruth Gordon as Minnie Castevet.
Yeah, I felt like maybe, you know, TV is a very different creature and machine than film. You know, less takes, got to get it in the can, deadlines to be hit.
For sure.
Very different to, you know, like, it's not, it's, I think TV's more
less
of an
rehearsal
art now.
As well.
Yeah. And I think TV's more of an art now than it was back then. I think, like, what a lot of people come to TV because they can tell a story and expand it. Like, a lot of A-list stars now do a lot of more TV than they did back in the 70s and 80s, especially dramatized versions of TV. But yeah, I would like to see them. Like a stage production of the first book would be amazing. Can you imagine just having this open plan, like two apartments back to back on stage, and it moves, and like the interchanging doors, and you could have the castanets going on with what they're doing on a Rosemary and her husband at the same time. Like when they're arguing through the walls, having two things going on at the same time would be absolutely an amazing, you know, it would be amazing.
Because the first movie, it almost is kitchen sink drama, but with... Yes. The twist of it being a horror story.
Yeah. No, agree.
Whereas in this, in the sequel, there are so many, I was going to use the word locations, but like you said, they were not locations.
No, it was a studio, backlot studio, and the desert around the studio.
Yes. But they created a lot of places within, you know, we see a lot of,
I thought it was a whorehouse.
There was a lot going on. Yeah. No, it's not. But it does. Yes, it does. It's the 70s. Maybe there's crossover. I don't know.
Yeah. So Claire, taking that one into consideration, how many... Oh, what should we go with? How many self-driving buses would you give Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby?
Oh, how many screams into the void. So I'm going to give this... I hummed and hawed. I'm going to fall down on the side of being slightly generous and give it 1.5 driverless buses out of 5. I think you like it more than I do. This is not a movie that I would be particularly interested in watching again. I will happily watch Rosemary's Baby again.
Yeah.
This is, but even, you know what I normally say, like my gauge is if I'm channel hopping late at night, or if I'm with someone who says, oh, I've never watched, can we watch? Would I say yes? Would I go, I'll watch that? And I think with this movie, I'd go, really? Can we not? Can we like anything else than this? Not anything. There are definitely worse movies out there than this. It's not just that it's a bad movie. And you're right. It's not really a bad movie. It's just a blah movie.
Yeah.
It's not a good sequel. It's not an interesting movie. You know, you talked about The Exorcist earlier. You know, even The Exorcist 2, The Heretic, which we have covered, if you want to go back and listen to our episode on that. You know, that's widely regarded as the worst horror sequel ever made. But I wonder if that's because so many people don't know that this movie exists. Because even that is trying to do something with the concept from the first movie. And I can't see what they're trying to achieve with this film.
Yeah.
Is my biggest issue with it. So for me, I feel like I'm being a little bit generous, really. I was going to go with a one, and then I thought that's a bit harsh. 1.5 driverless buses out of 5. How about you?
So is this a worthy sequel to Rosemary's Baby? Fuck no. Really is not. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Put that on the poster.
But is this a well-made TV movie? Yes.
Worth also, fuck no. No, sorry.
I think it is a well-made TV movie for the 70s. Okay. I think it's all right.
Okay.
But is it just a ratings cash-in? Yes. It is just trying to cash in of what the general public were into at that moment in time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would rewatch again. I would like to see a nice, clean Blu-ray 4K transfer of this, because I think that the fact
it's not going to happen. No one's going to put time and money into that.
Oh, I don't know. Some 4Ks of like random things I've gone home. Why would anybody want a 4K of that? And I'm like, okay, there must be an interest in it. I would like to see something else done with this franchise, and for it to be, you know, reattempted down the line with something, not a remake, maybe a play of the original one, or maybe a sequel somewhere along the line. But I also would give it 1.5 self-driving buses, because I think it's also quite jarring watching this movie straight after the other one. And you've got to remember, when this movie came out on TV, no one had access to watch the original movie. So they were going into, and also I don't think they repeated a lot of shit on TV back then. So if you didn't tune at 9 o'clock on that ABC Friday evening thing, if you missed it, you missed it. There was no VHSs to record anything. So I think ratings must have been quite good. I think people must have gone, oh, look. Don't know how many people finished the movie, but there was no rating information online, but people must have tuned in to watch it, because I know I would if this was me probably. And I was alive.
Yeah, you would.
You'd be like, oh, my God, you know. So, yeah, so that's Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby. We are carrying on this trend for the next episode. I'm not going to tell you which made-for-TV movie sequel we're doing, but if you want to shoot us a message or write a comment below and give a guess on what we're doing, I'll be keen to agree with you or not.
What could it possibly be?
Yes.
Anyway, listeners, please take a moment to rate us, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. And tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment. You can email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com, and you'll find us on all the socials at @unlovedsequels.
So it's goodbye from me, Michael.
And from me, Claire.
Take care, guys. Bye.
I still say it ain't right. Who is she anyway?
Considered, but